Joe's end of Project PHM, Project Hail Mary.
Adam's end of Project Fail Mary.
Oh, Project Failed Mary. That sounds like something about failed Mary, you know? Having said that, I think given that he was in space without gravity for so long, I expect there were okay, you know, there would have been some droplets of jism floating around, wouldn't there? That's a bit something about Mary.
Yeah, but then even if you're jerking off in space, you're still going to catch it in something. You don't just let it go.
Yeah, but it bounces off that something.
No, because you've...
Unless you catch it in something really absorbent.
Well, that's what...
Like Bounty, like a kitchen towel.
Oh, I thought you meant the chocolate bar for a minute. I'd personally like to jerk off into a Kit Kat.
Right.
But no, you catch it, you know, the soft fistful of Andrex.
Toilet paper, tissue paper.
Tissue paper, like what else?
Tissue.
You and me were discussing this not only the other day about, you know, you're baffled as to... You know, where else is jizz going? Like you say about there's something about Mary. As funny as that notion is, it is basically just, it's faulty as a joke. And it's the scene where Stiller jerks off.
Set this up properly, though, yeah. Because I know what you're talking about because you're referring back to a conversation that we've had, but the audience don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, you were talking about where do men jizz? And I'm then...
When they masturbate. Where is their ejaculate actually going?
Right. And I'm talking about the scene in There's Something About Mary where Ben Stiller is encouraged by his friend to masturbate before he goes on a date. As his friend says, you're going out there with a loaded gun. So it's a very funny notion. And then Stiller...
What does he masturbate into? I can't remember.
Well, that's the thing. This is why the joke and the premise of the joke is faulty because he's just going... off, and he's found a news, but this is pre-internet in a way, and like he's grabbed the thing that's closest to it, and he's hurriedly, furiously jerking it in the bathroom before Cameron Diaz comes over. It's very well cut. He Stiller grabs the newspaper to show that he's having an orgasm, and then he looks down and he's baffled as to where the jizz has gone.
Right.
So I'm watching this when I'm 15 or 16 and I'm thinking, why is he baffled as to where the jizz has gone?
Sometimes you sneeze and then you think, well, something definitely came out of my nose, but I don't know where it's gone. And then, like, you know, 5 minutes later, you look at your shoulder and it's covered in snot, you know. But not. That's never happened to me with ejaculate.
Or sneeze even. But in the movie, it's hanging off his ear.
Of course.
Diaz thinks it's hair gel. Again... She would have had a brain hemorrhage to think that this is hair gel.
My dad died of a brain hemorrhage.
Right. Let me get back to that and let me finish the anecdote.
Yeah.
every time it's always like, my dad had a brain hemorrhage. I could be talking
say
about
something else. Say a stroke. do it again and say a stroke.
She would have had to have had a stroke to think.
My grandmother died of a stroke. Actually, she didn't die. She did die, but she didn't die of the stroke. She had the stroke, and then she died 20 years later. What are you saying?
Yeah, and Stiller has just had a stroke. That's why I didn't say stroke.
Has he just had a stroke?
Well, no, like that's a euphemism for jerking off.
Oh.
So she grabs a handful of the jizz off his ear cleanly, as if it's this big, perfect globule. Yeah. Anyone who's handled jizz knows that's not how it works.
It doesn't stick together like glue like that, no.
She shoves it, she runs it through her hair, and then you cut to it's on Stiller, they're having dinner, and he's got this funny look on his face, wonderful stuff, and then you've got the reverse cut on Diaz, and she's got the sticky,
quiff
of jizz.
Yeah.
And like that's the payoff,
which doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, because it's like still isn't obviously. Well, that's not how a man does it.
But even if it was hair gel, it would do the same thing. So why would she take the hair gel and then create this quiff that would look silly? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and also why? And it would stink.
It
would stink of jizz.
The one thing everyone knows about jizzum is that it often doesn't smell pleasant. You know,
yeah.
Do you know it was a cultural phenomenon though? I remember now.
What, jizzing into your ear?
No, the notion that, like, you know, I don't know if you remember, but as a teenage boy, I very much felt worried that when I would eventually lose my virginity, that I would ejaculate so quickly because that was the cliche, you know? And so I remember actually for some time when I went out as a teenager, when I thought there was the possibility that I might have sex, that I did masturbate beforehand for fear that, you know, otherwise it would happen too quickly, for fear of exactly what Ben Stiller's friend in the film tells him. I'm sure I'd seen something about Mary. I'm sure that got into my head. And actually what happened to me when I lost my virginity, I think I went into it with the knowledge that of this cliche, thinking, oh God, it's all going to be over within seconds. And actually, I think I was so afraid of that, and afraid of this girl, and afraid of the intimacy so much that it actually lasted a really unpleasantly long time. And I had to really focus in order to actually finish this act. And absolutely nothing to do with the sexual partner involved. I'm sure many people, when they lose their virginity, have a very unpleasant time. But my memory of it was feeling as though my legs, my thighs were going to give way because I just simply couldn't keep up. I couldn't keep moving. I felt like I was going to die. Eventually, everything resolved itself. But I had the opposite problem, and I'm just glad that it's over with. I tell you, as a 35-year-old man, I am glad that it's over with, because it's very, I'm sure people, very few people enjoy their first time.
But I would still like to jerk off in a spaceship.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host, and Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmondo.
I was reflecting on that the other day when I was editing and thinking, I wonder, for new listeners, do they even know what your name is? Because you've been saying it like that for a couple of months now, Adam Richmondo.
Right.
Every time you've said it, you've said Adam Richmondo, you know.
Right.
What if you were to say it like this? What if you were to say Adam Richmondo, Richmond, you know? And that way people would know what your real name was, and they'd also have a little bit of that fun in there as well, that middle bit of fun.
Or they just read the show notes. I'm glad that they don't know my name.
Right. Yeah, me too. You know? Me too.
You're the talent. You're Billy Big Balls.
That's true.
Joining me as ever is Billy Big Balls. He's my co-host. He struggled to come when he was a virgin. It's Mr. Joe Devine.
That's a very broad description of what my problem was. That makes it sound like I couldn't ejaculate until I had sex for the first time, and then it like opened the floodgates. But I know that's not quite what you meant, but I just love how the English language leaves room for interpretation.
Me too. This is the show where we chat about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. But sometimes we also chat about a film that we've seen at the cinema and we've synced up.
It's a special episode.
Non-canon episode where we're going to chat about, Joe and me, we both saw Project Hail Mary.
That's right.
At the cinema.
We saw it separately. Very important to make that clear, isn't it, that we saw it separately.
I saw it before, Joe.
Yeah.
And then I sent Joe a picture of my letterbox review.
Which I didn't read.
Because Joe had no interest in seeing it, because he was like, who wants to see The Martian?
Yeah.
The Martian. Oh, has anyone, oh, from the makers of the, oh, has anything, has a trailer ever been any more pointless?
This looks terrible.
That was Joe. Yeah. And then I said, I've seen it. And Joe said, oh, maybe I'll go and see it.
Yeah.
I'll copy
it. Not really
you.
What happened, though. He said, let me just tell you what actually happened. We both said, this film looks shit from the trailer. And then you read all the news about it like a hungry, excited little horny little cinema boy. And you went, oh, all the men are saying that the Project Hail Mary is actually quite good. And then you talked about it in the Discord with some of our listeners, showing that you had knowledge of the quality of the film before you'd even gone to see it. And then you went to see it because you were told to. By people you don't know, and then you told me it was good, and I went, oh, someone I know said it's good, so I'll go now. And I went and had a good time.
No, I was very surprised. I still didn't believe that people. I thought this can't be true. It can't be as good as everyone's saying.
Sure,
but I'll take any excuse to go to the cinema.
That's right.
And this is basically the only thing that was on.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I don't recall saying it was good to you, but I'll, if I did,
you gave it three
maybe.
Stars. That means it's good.
I don't, not for my rating, it's not. I don't think three's a good movie. Yeah. I think
as discussed previously, and I won't relitigate going through your different star ratings that you give films on Letterboxd, but three is definitely good. Three is low in my book, but in your book it's not low.
No, it's not low. That's right.
Three,
yeah,
three and a half is very good. It's good / very good. Very good is four.
Yeah, it's not a bad movie.
Three's good.
It's not a bad movie. I'm not saying it is, but let's read the Letterboxd.
Mm-hmm.
It's directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller.
Just to be clear, we're reading the blurb, not because we were just talking about your Letterboxd review, but we're reading the blurb now.
Yeah. I'm fully convinced that the only people who listen to this show have listened to all the episodes, so I play fast and loose
sure.
with language. To the blurb that I read off the film app Letterboxd, which I used to pay for, but now I don't. I've just use it to log my movies. It's directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. They're the creative duo behind the likes of 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street. Mm. It stars Ryan Gosling.
Right.
And here we go. Believe in the Hail Mary. Science teacher Ryland Grace, Ryan Gosling, wakes up on a spaceship light years from home with no recollection of who he is or how he got there. As his memory returns, he begins to uncover his mission, solve the riddle of the mysterious substance causing the sun to die out. And it's not semen. although it does maybe look a little bit like it.
Yeah.
He must call on his scientific knowledge and unorthodox ideas to save everything on Earth from extinction. But an unexpected friendship means he may not have to do it alone.
Mm.
And it's 156 mins.
It's long.
It's a long runtime,
yeah.
Which I'm not a fan of generally.
No.
But here, probably shave off 20 mins and that would be fine. But I was never fully bored. It generally always had my attention.
The only time I was bored at all was I thought it was a little tiny bit slow to get going in the first 20. Bit bored when they were back on Earth, you know, but all necessary.
Well, yeah, it's based on the book of the same name by Andy Weir. It's not called by Andy Weir. It's called Project Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And the Andy Weir, he's the writer of the book The Martian, which was made directed by Ridley Scott, and that screenplay was written by Drew Goddard, and Drew Goddard came back to write the screenplay. To write the screenplay for this,
right?
The Martian's quite fondly regarded. Andy Weir does lots of hard sci-fi. He likes to dig into the what would really be required to do all this gubbins?
Yeah, Andy Weird, more like.
Right, and so people were pumped for this, and I guess you know the runtime reflects those we have to kind of go through. What would you have to do if this happened? If the sun's got a little virus, how would you do it? How would you solve it? And then, blah, de blah. Oh, and then how do you meet an alien? How would you learn to communicate with it? You know, that's what they're doing.
A white man writes on a whiteboard, you know, with maths and stuff, and then he answers his question.
Right.
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah.
So, where to start with this movie?
Well, I know where to start. You just said you'd never told me it was good. You never said it was good. You never said that. You never said that. Are you saying... You're not saying it's not good.
I don't recall saying it was good, but maybe I did.
No, I'm not saying you did or didn't. I don't care whether you did or didn't in the past. I care whether you do or don't now. So, do you think this is a good film? Don't overcomplicate the answer.
No, I think it's fine. I don't think it's good. I think it's fine.
Wow.
I think it's an achievement that a film so lightweight and so long didn't annoy me and didn't test my patience. There's just too many things in it that always held me at arm's length. I'll give you an example. In that opening sequence that you talk about, Ryan Gosling has found out, well, he knows about this thing infecting the sun, and he is unwittingly pulled into the team to solve, how can we save the world? You know, you're the guy we need. You're one of the guys. And he's kind of, he's very Ryan Gosling. He's like, oh, crumbs, I don't want to do this.
Sure.
And
he's sexy clumsy.
Sexy. He's not sexy at all, actually. This is the first time he is de-sexed of anything.
Really?
But we can get onto that. Yeah, okay. I didn't find him. I think he's de-sexed himself.
Okay.
And he said he has this notion of like, oh, this is how I'm going to figure it out. And him and his buddy, who's the actor from
The Bear.
Yeah, let's give him his due. It is the actor. Lionel Boyce.
Lionel what?
Lionel Boyce.
Lionel Boyce, a pastry man from The Bear.
Who's not in it nearly enough. But anyway, him and Lionel Boyce go shopping to a hardware store. And it's a scene where I've seen a million times that no one ever in the history of mankind has ever gone to a shop, to a grocery store, to a hardware store, and shopped like this. But it happens in a movie.
Sure, sure, sure.
It's kooky.
Yes.
It's funny. They're throwing things around.
You do, like, basketball again, shots into the trolley, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's all like, and I just think it loses my faith, the film, the filmmakers, and the choice to do that. I just
do you think the actors get there on the set on the day, and they go, and you know, the directors are like, okay, this is a bit boring, but we just need to get some shots of you putting sellotape in the trolley. And they're doing that for a bit. The actors get a bit bored, and then they go, actually, I think my character would actually maybe do a bit of sports here or have a bit more fun. And then everyone gets a bit carried away. And we all love to see sexy people smile, you know, nice people smile and do sports and that kind of stuff. Maybe it just always finds its way in there, doesn't it? Because you can, as soon as you put a little bit of like upbeat 80s music underneath it, then it's a music video. It's a fun, everyone's having a fun time music video. I can see how these things happen, but I do agree with you that they're not very realistic.
Yeah, but you're sort of saying it earns its runtime. It's like, well, no, it doesn't, because you could have that scene where Gosling goes, oh, I know what we need to do. And he just, you know, types in his order into B&Q online, and it gets bought to him, and he's just building the thing. But,
well, no, I mean, that's bad.
No, you get the stuff and he builds it.
Yeah.
But the filmmakers and Gosling, they think, oh, this is a character moment, and it's fun and it's charming. And by all accounts, the directors had of like a 4.5-hour cut of the movie. And they showed it to the friends, and they were like, even then they knew it was too long and it was tough, and people, you know, stuff that they thought was charming didn't land and had to go. And I'd say, well, they missed a scene that they thought was charming and isn't charming, and it could have gone.
Okay.
And so it's just stuff like that. And I know it seems like I'm probably nitpicking. It's just an example of something that, a flavor that kind of happens, I feel like, enough in the movie. So I think, oh, it goes from a good movie to an okay movie. Was my solve not any good? Can he not just order this stuff online?
But that's fair enough. I think that's fine. I don't know that ordering it online is the answer, though, because it will arrive in 2 days' time, and they need it then and there, you know? They could go to the shop and have a little bit less fun. And also, that the other thing that scene is doing is building a bit of suspense about what Ryan Gosling is planning to build, and showing that his kooky approach to science is a little more primer than it is The Martian, right? Like, he's like a DIY guy. He's building it with things that an ordinary person can find in the shop. So I agree. I think they misjudge the charming character building notion of that scene. And there are, as you point out, enough other scenes already that establish who he is as a person. But I think that scene does serve a purpose for the plot as well, and for a little bit of character development that is outside of like how funny he is when he says things. For the record, I think there are probably 7 or 8 bits in the film that you could lose for exactly the reason that you've just described losing this shopping scene. But it doesn't, it's not enough to downgrade the film from good to me. The film, I don't think the film is very good. I think the film's edging towards very good in my rating system. And I think the key difference from having spoken to you briefly about it before is our experience. I was very moved by the relationship between the two main characters. And I don't think you were. You said that there were moments all the way throughout the film where you recognize, oh, the film's supposed to move me here, and it doesn't. And I think that's a massive problem, because if it doesn't, then it's not a good film. And if it does, then it's a very good film. The whole thing swings on that relationship. By the end of the film, I disagree with some of the choices. I disagree with some of where the film went. I don't love the ending, but I'm so on board. I'm all in with the relationship between Ryan Gosling and this alien. I recognize it to be something that's very of its era. I don't think this would have been anywhere near the same film if it was made even 10 years ago. And I love the alien. I absolutely love the alien. I could spend more time with the alien. The alien and Ryan Gosling together, that's enough for me to say this is verging on a very good film. And all of the problems that you describe don't dequalify it for me. But that's because I moved. I cried in the cinema. I felt something.
No, but it's not a good movie. It's a fine movie, and it's verging on a good movie.
Yeah, but if it's not a good movie, then it's not a good movie.
No, I disagree. I don't want to get a semantic debate with you, but me saying I don't think this is a good movie is not me saying it's a bad movie. And that's what people think when I say that. Or it's I'm not saying it's not a good movie. I'm saying it's a fine movie.
So just to clarify, when you say something's not a good movie, you don't mean it's not a good movie.
Right. In response to you sort of saying, do you think it's a good movie? For me, I don't. For me, it's not a good movie.
It's a fine movie.
Anything off the trolley, dears?
I was listening to Lord and Miller talking about how they made it, and then Drew Goddard talking about how he wrote it and the puppetry of The Rock and how Gosling was all by himself.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson's in this film. They puppeted him. Wow.
I think the reason why the relationship between Gosling and The Rock works is because it was improvised, and also Gosling is such a good actor and it really comes out, and there's a tangible, real thing, and he's talking to the puppeteer, and that is amazing. You know, it's a real achievement. They went for it when they made it. It just didn't touch me, didn't move me.
What about when in the latter stages of the film, when The Rock has climbed out of his protective shell to save Gosling, because there was no way of doing it other than to put himself in serious danger. This is the alien. And then Ryan Gosling discovers him after he wakes up, and he's still the rock. The alien is still awake, limping, has no energy. And Ryan Gosling, because he's been waiting for Ryan Gosling to wake up earlier in the film, we've established that this species, they watch each other when they sleep, because they don't sleep in the same way as humans. They sleep for a long time when they do. They sort of regenerate, I guess, and they're completely vulnerable when they do. So they have this culture of watching each other. And Ryan Gosling says, "Don't worry, pal, I'll watch you while you sleep, as long as you promise to wake up." And there's a scene where, obviously we know he's going to wake up again, but he doesn't wake up for a long time. You felt nothing in that moment. You didn't feel, oh, I hope that the alien, the sweet alien that's kind of, tried to sacrifice himself at Gosling's, I hope he wakes up again.
Well, no, because I know he is.
So you didn't, but I knew he was as well. But like, I recognize the same structure as you. I know how long's left. I know that he's going to wake up again. But I still want him to wake up. You didn't feel any desire related to it one way or the other.
That's the closest bit. you know, all the chaos in the ship is happening, and this is where the film is reaching its emotional peak. And I'm feeling, I can feel, like, emotions are, the beginnings are there, yes. And I should be, they could build and they could build and they could build.
They're welling.
But they didn't. It didn't even get close to bubbling.
What about when Gozzes decides to return to sacrifice his life, to go back when he realizes that his alien pal is going to be in trouble, and he gets there and the ship is sort of dead and he's knocking on the door, and then his alien friend appears and they have their reunion. You don't feel anything then either?
No, because it's even more obvious that the rock is still alive.
But the thing is, like, I don't understand why you equate feeling to, like, suspense in this scenario. Like, I also know the rock isn't dead, but it doesn't mean I don't feel anything about it. That's what confuses me. Like, you're saying that because you're not surprised by the film, therefore you don't feel anything about it. But are you required to be completely taken by surprise in order to feel something about a film? I don't think so. So I don't think that's why you didn't feel anything. I think that's just the excuse that you are giving yourself in this moment.
No, it's not an excuse. I think, obviously, that's not the rule of whether I feel emotion or not. But it's akin to how you make someone laugh. A joke is based on, you know, a setup and then a surprise and a reveal. And I think a feeling an emotion like sadness, something gets you in your gourd. And it makes you feel something that you didn't realize about yourself, or that you didn't realize, or it brings to mind something. It evokes this feeling. It brings it out. So this isn't the film's failure. I've got buttons inside me, and it missed those buttons. It was pushing other buttons, but it didn't come close to pushing the button to make me to even close to welling up. And that's
because Ryan Gosling's dad wasn't in the film. That's why.
Yeah, he's effectively an alien as well. He's basically not a human being.
He's got no one. It's interesting you say that about the setup of a joke, though. You know, about being surprised, because one of our favourite comedians, Stuart Lee, a lot of what he does is setting something up that you can finish yourself in your head as the audience, the familiar, something you know where it's going. And that gives you a great sense of kind of pleasure as well. We've talked about this before. One of my favourite things in film is the great sense of comfort that I get from knowing where something's going. And I think often, like, again, like something that's different between you and I is that that often increases my enjoyment of a film, whereas it seems to decrease your enjoyment of the film.
Well, with Stuart Lee, and no disrespect to Project Hail Mary, his setup is always far more interesting in and of itself. But unfortunately, the setup of Project Hail Mary, it's not anywhere close to what Stuart Lee's done in its setup. And so I'm not really interested in finishing its thought for it or feeling its emotions.
And yet you have done that, except not the emotions part, but you finished all of its thoughts before it finished them itself, and then went, well, I can't be upset now because I know what's going to happen.
I want to be upset. I want to cry, always.
So what is it? What do you think it was then that didn't move you about the film, if it wasn't that because you knew where it was going? It's like
It's because the relationship is between a man and a dog, and I don't give a shit about that kind of relationship.
You don't like
it doesn't
dogs.
Get me. I don't like dogs. Right. It doesn't speak to me, and it's funny, and the film is light and entertaining, and it's very well made, and blah 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 blah. I'll keep throwing in that caveat in case everyone thinks I'm dunking on Project Hail Mary. because, like, oh, I'm so angry it was so successful, and now this is, according to Rotten Tomatoes, his best film ever made.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Better than La La Land, better than Drive, better than Half Nelson, another film I don't really rate at all. I don't care. I'm not bothered that people like this movie. I don't feel left out of the conversation. But I couldn't give a fuck about
it. I think you're bothered that you didn't cry about it, though, right? Like, you said you want to cry. You'd much rather you'd much rather go to the cinema and be moved to tears by this relationship, but you weren't.
Yeah, but then I don't take that as a loss. You've got to swing. You've got to go to the cinema, and maybe it's rare that a movie moves you. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's lovely when it happens. I keep turning up. I will keep turning up to the cinema, and I'll keep trying to see the movie and keep trying to be moved.
Yeah.
And if I'm not moved, it's fine. I don't hold it against it. I gave it 3 stars.
But you understand why I was moved.
Absolutely. And I love that. I'm jealous. I'm jealous you got moved.
Yeah, I got really moved. I was so moved, I even moved seats almost, you know?
What I thought was really funny is that you didn't realise that The Rock was a puppet.
No, I didn't, because it just looks like CGI.
You kept saying, hang on a sec, what? That? How did they have him in the suit then? And I said, I think he was just in a puppet and they took the... And you were like, no, he was in a suit though. And I'm like...
No, I mean, he's in the circle.
Yeah, and the circle is also a physical...
But his legs move inside the circle.
Yeah, but it's
so how do you puppet something that is surrounded by a globe?
Great question. And that's what all the making of videos
are for. Which you couldn't answer. Don't say you said it was funny, because I asked a serious question. How do you puppet operate the legs of a puppet that are inside a solid globe? You can't. You can't.
But what was the funniest was that then I just said, I don't know, maybe, whatever. And then you said, why would they bother? It looked like CGI anyway.
It looks the same. I didn't even stop for a moment to think, oh, this puppet feels... I mean, I guess,
That's worse than what I said about the movie.
when it's bashing around in the ship and knocking stuff over, I think, okay, yeah, maybe that makes sense. That's how they gave it such a sense of heaviness in the film, I suppose. And maybe the filmmakers would say, well, that you didn't question it at all is exactly the idea. But I also don't question the CGI ones either. I mean, I just don't care. That's not what I'm interested in about films. And I'm sure those things are quality of life differences, that when you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars, I understand why you would want to go for those. But I'm much more of a sort of core storyline guy. You know, I'm into the story. I don't give a fuck if the thing's CG or not.
You would have noticed, I think, that the weight of it, and then also everything they were banging on about Gosling, he's with the puppet, he's talking to the guy, the creation, it's not a ball on a stick, all that emotion that you love, that
Andy Serkis rolling around the ship,
yeah, that relationship comes from that physicality, and that's all fine,
got it,
but it does wind me up though sometimes, because I like written movies, and then I saw, you see Lord and Miller talking about the making of, and they're sort of saying, oh, and Gosling, he's got an earpiece in, and the puppeteer's got an earpiece in, and we're just feeding them lines, and we're saying to
right,
the...
It's like Anchorman, is it?
Yeah, and then I'm just like, how about just write a fucking script and film it? But then I haven't done that, and then everyone loves this movie, so I don't know what I mean when I think that, but I do think
I don't,
it.
I mean, I don't know either, because like... Because this is much better. I mean, this is one of the reasons
what?
That, you know,
better than
your enthusiasm is so fun. Than The Martian.
Oh, yeah. It's
this is much better than The Martian.
It is much better than The Martian. But I mean...
That brings me on to... Oh, go on.
Yeah, no, so you said Curb Your Enthusiasm. I like that, fine, but I don't think... It's not the be-all and end-all. It's not the thing that I would go back to. I always go back to, aside from Christopher Guest movies, I go back to movies that were written. And I hate seeing stuff on my social media feed where it's like a clip of a movie. And it always the thing says, and Jack Nicholson improvised this entire scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like they're jizzing in there. It's like, oh, isn't that amazing? It's like, fuck off. How about...
I told you, I'm just editing a bit in a previous podcast in the prime episode. I've cut it out, but I was talking about Leo DiCaprio improvising some elements of a scene in one battle after another, and you lost your mind. And in fact, you did this to me the other day. This is a you problem. You hate stuff like this. I told you the other day, I sat through a job interview where I was doing the interviewing rather than being interviewed, and the person who was being interviewed had a phone, like their phone rang during the interview, and they lifted it up and said, "Oh," and then they told me who it was because it was a famous person, and it made sense in the context of their employment, their current employment. Anyway, I told you about that afterwards, and your immediate instinctive response was to go, oh, and you just believed it, did you? You just believed... Of course that didn't happen, you idiot! You idiot! Like the notion that I believed it was so offensive to you that you exploded with fury. It just immediately, which is exactly the same as the thing that's happening here. If some filmmakers have been asked in an interview, it's like, well, do you think the puppet thing was important? And they've gone, actually, yeah, we think it is. And then you've gone, no, it's not. Or the improvisation thing, you know, no, it's not. No, it's not. Why don't you just have a script like normal people? Why don't you just not do the thing? You know, you should check that, man. Because that guy really did receive that phone call. And Ryan Gosling's great at improvising. And it made the film better. And I think it's a good film.
We don't know if it made it better because we don't know what it would have been without it. I'm not saying it wasn't important. It was obviously important to the process. It being a real puppet was important to to do it. I just don't... I'm not that impressed.
It probably actually
with...
made it worse in some scenes because his character actually was very... His character didn't make a lot of sense in some places, partly through how it was expressed through dialogue. Like, I think... one thing I didn't like about... Oh, here's a couple of things I didn't like about the film, okay? I don't like the way that Ryan Gosling wears his glasses, where he has them hung over one ear and then down on the chin. The other arm is all askew.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's the sexiest, cool, most attractive guy I've ever seen in my life. Of course, he's like some nothing middle school, you know, teacher. No, he hasn't got a girlfriend. No one loves him. He hasn't got any friends. He hasn't got any family. It's completely unbelievable, totally insane. And I appreciate that's not just a problem with this film. That is a problem with Hollywood films generally. But it is absurd in this film.
It's a problem with his career, actually. It's not Hollywood films. It's a lot of his films, he plays that same kind of character, like different shades of it, but it's just like, sure. Why do you think you can get away with this, Gosling?
Totally. So here's another thing I didn't like about it. I don't like how hard it hits the kind of postmodern comedy button from the beginning of the film. I think somebody, you know, the directors should have realized that Sandra Hüller's character, who she plays the kind of the organizer of the scientific response to this big problem, that she's involved in the fun. She's having a good old time with Gossers, and she's got this kind of like, you know, Northern European, completely deadpan, straight-faced comedic turn that's written into her character. It's not just about her performance. It's written in there. It's totally unnecessary. It wastes screen time. And also, I think it complicates the world of this film. It makes me feel as though the world of this film isn't serious. And this is the thing that annoyed me about the film the most. And by the way, I still liked it and thought it was good. But here's the reason I don't think it's very good. It's a product of its time, such to the extent that it's embarrassed of itself. It's too embarrassed to take itself and its conceit seriously. The first 30 minutes setting up, they're so concerned with the film having fun and having great little cinematic moments and it being, you know, dare I say it, TikTokable, that, you know, the filmmakers, I think, are afraid to have Sandra Hüller in a serious scene explain the conceit of the film to Ryan Gosling without them kind of twerking at each other or milking each other or doing whatever the fuck it is that they're doing. And I think it gets in the way of itself. It is embarrassed of itself in a sort of postmodern way. And it got me, you know, we talked about this the other day and reflected on Timothy Chalamet's Oscar campaign. And for all the detractors of Timothy Chalamet's Oscar campaign, that guy wanted to win an Oscar and tried really hard to do it off the back of a film that he took incredibly seriously, where he was never embarrassed of it in any moment. And this film at times feels like it's embarrassed of itself and it's trying to kind of joke its way through that, like a stand-up comedian who laughs and says that a bit didn't work. He goes, oh, that didn't work, to get a laugh out of the crowd before moving on to the next bit. No, don't say that. Just, it didn't work. Move on to the next bit. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think... They're doing that for Hüller, she's from
Hüller
from Anatomy of a Fall. She's great,
and from Zone of Interest, of course.
Of course, haven't seen that yet. But they at the minute, the whole thing is the Gosling show, and they're like, okay, we do have to give him a counterweight, and like, let's give her some meat on the bone. Let's kind of give her a character. It only works because she's a great actress and just great to watch. I really like my favourite bit is her singing karaoke. I loved it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
She's terrific. Yeah. Well, because she makes you, in an instant, she makes you believe and feel a whole a whole truth which the film hasn't really seeded, right?
Yeah. I mean, I want to go back to what you said about the improvisation, because I said, oh, maybe it made a better film. And I love the fact that you said, oh, maybe it didn't, but for that inconsistency's sake, because it's there. That's bang on, because there is no semblance of Hugh this character is, not least because he wakes up with amnesia, the hackiest of fucking plot devices in the history of all film, like, writing. And then it's just this get out clause, like, but then who are you? It doesn't matter. And then, like,
Hugh, am I?
I mean, even Jackie Chan's done it, forget about it. And there is just this, there's no sense of...
That's a great movie, though. That is a good movie.
Yeah, I wish I'd watched that instead. But like you say, like, he wears his glasses in this stupid, sexy way. He wakes up with this long, horrible beard, and he's got long, lank, greasy hair. And then somehow he manages to give himself this sexy, bouffant, sort of slightly bleached, streaky hair.
The film cheats there also, because, like, his first cut is a very believable self-cut. So he goes from, like, you know, Gandalf the Wizard to having, like, you know, pretty much no beard, and then, like, some still, like, kind of silly curtains hair. And then all of a sudden, 15 minutes later, he has an incredible haircut that could only be achieved by visiting a hairstyler designer that morning. And the film doesn't try to explain itself there. It just seems very content with thinking, well, we've paid for Ryan Gosling. We've paid, you know, millions of dollars for Ryan Gosling. We might as well have sexy glasses askew Gosling, which I think is fine, but it does take you out of the film momentarily.
Yeah, I don't think it's fine.
He's downgrading. He said he thought it was fine. Now he thinks he's talking himself into saying it's bad.
It made me think the whole notion of film criticism is absolutely pointless, because if you don't like a film, it just means you've watched it at the wrong time.
This is your favourite thing to do, isn't it? Is to over the course of a podcast talk yourself out of liking anything about a film. I think, look, I've just done a bit where I've gone, okay, here's things I didn't like about it. Now it's your turn to do things you did like about it.
I really liked how you didn't like how the film started. I really liked how they set the film up and the exposition of the event. I thought this is nice, good script writing. I really like Drew Goddard. He wrote Cloverfield, he worked on Lost, he wrote Cabin in the Woods, which I really like, is really fun. He wrote The Martian, which, whilst it's not a great movie, I think it's decent. And, like, I think, you know, there's bones of a good flick in there.
It's Deese McDeese.
Yeah, and I like whenever I've listened to him talk about screenplays he's written. He seems like a good guy. He gets story. Mm-hmm. He's really passionate. I imagine this is probably quite a hard book to adapt. I think it's quite a meaty thing. It's quite hard sci-fi-y. I think he's done a bang-up job.
Fair enough.
And I appreciate how all the moving parts are, like, set up. So I like that. Mm-hmm. I did like some of the jokes. I liked some of the interplay between Gozzers and The Rock. It was quite fun. Mm-hmm.
Did you like the bit where he's doing his movie vlog, and he's whispering into the camera really quietly, and then the robots responding to hit the robot, the aliens responding to him, and that's the cinema laughed at that bit. We all enjoyed it in the daytime cinema.
Yeah, I enjoyed that, but then it's like, where has this come from, and what movie am I? What is the movie now? The movie decides to be different movies throughout, and some people.
That's what I mean by TikTokable.
Could argue, like, no, that's a good thing. Can't it? It can move through all these things, and isn't that good?
Sure. And wait, you're on a good list. You're slipping into saying a bad thing.
No, yeah, okay. So, on its own terms, those individual moments are quite funny. And made me smile. I think the evocation of The Rock is great.
Sure.
Fantastic. Love that. And it does put, it invests time in like properly like getting them, how they get to know each other. It doesn't rush it. And
that's true.
I do like how it ended. I did think it could, I would have ended it differently.
Me too.
But I got no qualms with where it went and how it ended. Like, yeah, sure. That makes total sense to me.
It's nice and it feels different. And again, it's another thing that I think makes it a product of its time. I think a film from a different era would have ended differently.
You tell me how you think it would have ended differently before I say my final thing I really liked. This is what I really liked. And this is where it make, mm-hmm. this is where it would, it veer. This is what pushes it closest to being good. Is the fact that it turns out he never really volunteered. He got forced on there and he was drugged. And that's yeah. like, oh, okay, cool. He's a coward. And he had to learn how to not be a coward. I like that. Yeah. That's for a $200 million sci-fi yeah. flick. I don't mind it. Like the hero's call, the refusal to the call is baked into the hero's journey that everyone, Joseph Campbell, everyone bangs on about it because George Lucas sort of chatted about it back in the day with Star Wars. You always sure. get the hero refusing the call. And the assumption is they then change their mind and go, yes, no, I'm going to go on this adventure. And this film never has that. And then you're actually told, he always refused the call and never wanted to do this.
Well, I guess he takes the call later when he's on the spaceship.
Yes.
He heeds the hero's call several times.
But we, not structurally where you would usually have the hero's call. The refusal, sure. that yeah. usually happens at the end of the first act, Joe.
Sure.
Go back to the early episodes, guys, when I go into really great detail of what...
I've got something for you now.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, we've talked about this before, but I want to talk again about opening a movie, okay? Because this is, you've schooled me over the years of this podcast that opening a movie is not just a thing that any old actor can do. It's something that very, very few people can do. So I've prepared something.
Historically. That's the case. I think although the biz is changing, but yeah, historically.
Okay. Well, look, the reason I haven't defined it at this moment is because I've got Colin's help in two different ways. The first is with the definition of what opening a movie actually means. And the second is with a tiered list of actors that Colin thinks can open films in different ways. Okay, so I'm going to put both of these to you and we're going to decide whether, and we'll do that also in conjunction with playing the box office game afterwards, whether or not we believe that the old Gozo can open a movie. Okay, so feel free to interject at any time whenever you disagree. I know you will.
Oh, can I not tell you before you tell me what it is? Can I say what I think opening a movie is? Oh, okay.
We all know you know.
Oh, great. As long as everyone knows I know.
You said earlier, I think it's important for you to maintain your internal continuity. You've already said on this episode of the podcast that you believe that the only people who listen to this are people who've listened before. So they will have heard your definition previously
yeah.
of opening a movie. There's no need to show off again. Okay, here we go. This is what Colin says. The core definition, an actor can open a movie if... their presence meaningfully increases opening weekend box office, independent of the IP, reviews, or the concept. Everything else is just noise, says Colin. This is the strict definition. Do you agree with that? I mean, he goes on to, he has rules, but do you agree with that broadly?
Yeah, it's kind of slightly buried the lead, but that he's getting to the notion of it. A name alone, people will turn up to the flick.
Okay.
Whether it's a sci-fi or an action or whatever, the thing's like, yeah, no, we're going to go.
It's name alone.
It's Cruise.
Well, that Cruise, jives.
You know, just, I don't.
Don't say names. Okay, fine. No, fine, don't fine. Precursor the. Okay, look, rule number one, says Colin, opening weekend is the only thing that counts. Studios care about Friday to Sunday or the global equivalent. They care about pre-sales, first weekends. They don't care about legs or awards or cultural impact. If a film builds over time, that's not star power. That's word of mouth, okay? Rule number two, it has to work without major IP. This is the big filter. If the film is a superhero movie or a sequel or a remake or is based on a massive brand, you can't totally credit
the author. Muddies the waters.
Right, so this is why Colin said, and I am sort of foreshadowing a little bit here, this is why Colin says someone like Robert Downey Jr. is disqualified from tier one, because, you know, maybe he's, some people would misunderstand that, like, oh, okay, Iron Man's got huge appeal. Well, yeah.
They went for Iron Man. But also, he's disqualified because even after all that success, he was in Dr. Dolittle, and no one fucking turned up. So you already know that was a hat. The rich IP of Dr. Dolittle. Please, can I see a movie about a man who can talk to animals, starring Robert Downey Jr.?
Okay, rule number three, consistency matters more than peaks. So one hit doesn't count, says Colin. To qualify, you need multiple films across different genres over time. Okay, so maybe that might apply to Gozzers when we talk about Gozzers.
I think, yeah, it will. It's interesting. He's an interesting, you know, chat.
Okay. Rule number four, the film has to be sold on them. So when you look at the marketing, you have to honestly think, is their name above the title? Is the trailer basically, you know, this person in a film? I think as it relates to Gosling, you can say that about Project Hail Mary, because in the same way that The Martian was Matt Damon in space, this one is... It's Ryan Gosling in space. That's what the marketing of the film is, right?
Yeah, it's Project Hail Gosling.
Okay. Rule number five... they must lift weak material. This is the quiet one that studios really watch for. They say if reviews are mixed, the concept is mid potentially. Marketing isn't exceptional, but it still opens well because the movie star is a movie star. Rule number six, there's seven rules. Rule number six, international box office is part of the equation. It's not enough to open domestically. You have to travel globally. And rule number seven...
This is several. I love rule number several.
You're competing against the quote IP baseline. So this is the modern adjustment. Colin says studios will ask, would this film open significantly lower with a lesser known actor? If the answer is not really, then the actor isn't really opening. I mean, we've probably covered that one a little bit.
Sounds like a repeat, Colin. You're floundering at that point.
Why do you need to find a seventh rule?
Yeah.
So this is why Colin's list is so small then, because you need to pass all of these. You need fame, trust, range, global appeal, and consistency over time. And that's why in tier one, I mean, you can have a guess. So Colin's split into six tiers, right? Tier one is true openers. Name alone moves opening weekend. There's only two actors on Colin's list. Colin believes only two actors working today are true movie openers. You've said one of them already.
Tom Cruise.
Would you like to guess who the second one is?
Is it another man?
Yes.
It's got to be Leo then.
It's Leo.
Right.
Yeah.
Great.
Leo's the only other, according to Colin, Leo's the only other true opener. Would you like to suggest anyone else?
Well, back in the day, Big Willie, Big Will, he was the guy, he could open a picture.
He was the guy. There's tier six category. There are former openers. Big Willie's not actually in that one. He's in tier two, which is strong openers with the right package.
Not anymore.
So brackets for Will Smith. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Would you like to guess who might be in that one though?
Yeah, I'm thinking around for people. You know, your Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's are no longer knocking around, I think, tier two. Like Timmy Chalamet, he's no one's turning up to Dune because of him. I feel like he's more like a tier three.
Timmy Chalamet's in tier three.
Yeah.
And tier three is movie stars without opening power.
He doesn't feel like tier two. So tier two, maybe.
Tier two is interesting because the names on here, there's some that are like specific genre, for example, or that, you know, there's like. So I'll just give you one.
Yeah, give us
I'll
one. Just give you one. Jennifer Lawrence.
Dwayne Johnson is on tier two, and yeah. I think that's because Dwayne Johnson can open an action movie, right? Like, so there's the specific thing. That's what's also why he wouldn't be considered a true opener in the case of Colin's categorization, because he doesn't fit that range category. He can't do it across genre, but you know, there certainly was a period, if not now, where Dwayne Johnson could open an action film.
Ryan Reynolds.
So Ryan Reynolds is in tier two also. Will Smith was in here. There's an actor who I thought might show up in former openers who are no longer reliable draws. Maybe the kind of, you know,
Adam
Leo
Sandler?
Before Leo.
Oh, Leo before Leo. Who was Leo before Leo?
Well, it's one half of a game that you and I like to play against each other, and it's the half you're not going to be happy with.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, Bradley Pitt's.
Brad Pitt is here in tier two.
Again, because the people have shit taste and they wouldn't err on Clooney.
And then we have our only woman in tier two, who I don't know if I would have put here, but then I guess it makes sense. It doesn't make so much sense today, but I think you can make the argument certainly in the sort of like years between 2005 and 2020, maybe.
Oh, not like Emma. We're not talking Emma Stone.
Emma Stone's tier three.
Really?
Yeah.
I think people turn up for her for across thing. You know, you're going to Begonia because of her. You're not going to go because of the Yorgos Lanthimos.
I don't know. I think the people that are going to Begonia are going because of Yorgos Lanthimos. Some people are going because of Emma Stone, but and again, like those movies don't quote open, right? So like, I don't know if she counts as a strong opener without the material or being connected. You know, that the Begonia was sold as a kind of a co Emma Stone, co Yorgos Lanthimos Oscar director. So I think, you know, as far as Colin's criteria go, no, it's Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, no, there you go. That's the one.
Which it was surprised me to see her there, but then as soon as I read her name, I thought, actually, that makes quite a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Less so now. But, like, you know, what I love about the game is, like, where does someone like Keanu Reeves sit? And he's probably more like a tier four.
So he's not in here.
Really?
But I think that's because Colin's just suggested some names.
Where would you put Keanu Reeves?
So let me tell you what the other tiers are, because tiers one through six, they're not necessarily like six isn't the furthest away from one. They're different categories. So tier two was strong openers with the right package. Tier three is movie stars without necessarily having opening power. Tier four is conditional or emerging potentially. Tier five is franchise dependent stars, which I'm not going to have you guess for that one. That's just a lot of people that are in the Marvel movies. And then tier six was former openers who are no longer reliable draws today. So you could argue that maybe Keanu Reeves could have fit into that category. I don't know. Do you think Keanu Reeves can still open a movie today? He's not a true opener. He could be a strong opener with the right package.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Because he's not really critically regarded at all. He's fun, you know, he's liked. He has to be. If he's not in the John Wick movie, no one's turning up. They won't go and see the John Wick movie with anyone else.
That's also IP, isn't it?
And the same, but he's inextricably linked. The power of him, like him and the Matrix. If he's not in the Matrix and the Matrix movie comes out, fuck it, I'm not going to go and see that.
I think if they made a new Matrix film that had like Timmy Chalamet as the lead, I think people would go and see that film.
I think a lot of people wouldn't, and they'd say, "How dare you?"
A lot of older people wouldn't.
And a lot of young people would go, "What is the Matrix and what is this shit?" and forget it.
So maybe he is in strong openers with the right package. Maybe he's in conditional openers, maybe.
Yes.
So are there other actors in movie stars who are movie stars but don't necessarily have opening power? We've already got Emma Stone in there. I think this is where... So this is where Colin puts Ryan Gosling. And I said to Colin, "Well, what about how do you qualify that with Project Hail Mary?" And Colin's response is... Sure, but, you know,
let's see
it again.
Yeah, do it again.
Let me see it again. Like, maybe he could move into tier two, right? But, like...
He didn't open Blade Runner 2049. I love the fact your guy, Gozzers, is tier two. Yeah. My guy, Leo, tier one, he's mate. It's a different class, and we're in a different... We're just moving at different crowds.
So he does say, the case for Gozzers, this is Colin would say, that, you know, Barbie was massive, but of course it was driven by the IP, it was driven by Margot Robbie, other things. La La Land was a big hit, but it was co-led with somebody else. You know, he does have strong audience, goodwill overall, but the case against him is a little stronger. Blade Runner underperformed commercially. Nice Guys People liked it, but it didn't open big.
Nope.
First Man is respectable, but not an opening weekend force. The Fall Guy, recent test case,
bombed.
Didn't suggest that he opens on name power.
Yeah.
He's basically an A-list star who elevates films, but doesn't independently open them. Maybe that's changed with Project Hail Mary, but the consistency isn't there. The consistency across genre isn't necessarily there. So I think that's the kind of, that's the interesting part about that. That's why Colin puts him in tier three.
He's dependent on material.
Well, maybe not with Project Hail Mary, but over his career, probably sounds like it, yeah.
The nature of that movie, it's a big boffo box office flick. He'd obviously, without him, it wouldn't have had such broad appeal.
Let me put this to you though, right? Like thinking through what you're just saying, when was the last time that Tom Cruise opened a movie that wasn't either a Mission Impossible movie or wasn't an action movie in the vein of Tom Cruise does stunts, right? Because sure, he's in the final Stanley Tubricks. And I'm sure that he did open, you know, he opened Vanilla Sky, did he? I don't know. We talked about box office for that. But like, if one of the categories is range over time, then, and if Tom Cruise was tomorrow, was in, let's say he was in the next film that's made by Emerald Fennell or something, is he opening that movie?
Well, there is already, the test case is coming. He's in Alejandro González Iñárritu's upcoming movie, no IP, very odd trailer. It's just called Digger. It's coming out this year. A comedy of catastrophic proportions. This will be the test case this of Ken Cruz open a flick. I feel like
that's exciting.
Very. I'm worried about it.
Well, should we chain this into the box office game? Because that might help us determine whether or not we think Gaza's changes lists or not.
Yeah, let's chain it in.
All right. Do you want to guess the budget brackets estimated for this film, Project Hail Mary?
I know it's spiraled. I feel like it's spiraled a lot, over 200, and I feel like it might be punching 250 mil.
The estimated here is 200.
Oh, okay. It didn't spiral. It spiraled.
It's a lot, though. I think is it the most expensive film we've ever talked about?
Yeah, probably up there. Yeah,
I think it might be. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Well, opening weekend, US and Canada. It was last weekend. Was the opening weekend March 22nd?
I think I have a snifter of it making something around 90 mil. I think
I have a little snifter. Well, it made $80,500,000 on its opening weekend, which is pretty incredible, isn't it? I mean, that's above Logan territory, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe that is incredible these days.
You don't think that's good? I think that's pretty good these days, isn't it?
As soon as you said incredible, I went, oh, what? But, yeah, sure.
Biggest opening weekends in 2025. Let's compare it to last year.
Not last year. Compare it to Avatar. But compare it like for like. Compare it to Avatar, Wind of the Water, or Way of the World.
Wind of the World of the World. It would be enough to rank it only at the 130. Oh, there, it's literally there. I'm trying to find the number, but the number is already there. It's 130. It has the 132nd best opening weekend ever. It's less than Twisters from 2024. It's just less than Oppenheimer. It's less than Dune. It's less than The Passion of the Christ. It's less than X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Oh,
from 2009, but that was a long time ago when maybe it was different. I'm looking for films that are of around
the closer
era. Yeah. So it's less than How to Train Your Dragon, which is, I guess, is a kid's film.
Incredible. So yeah, it's just seeming less incredible is all. That's all I'm going to say.
Avatar Fire and Ash from 2025 only made a few million more.
Okay, yeah.
So actually, maybe. And what's the highest up I can get in the 2020s? So Beetlejuice in 2024 made $111 million on an opening weekend, which is kind of nuts.
What a way. What?
The Fantastic Four First Steps in 2025 made $117 million, but again, it's part of a franchise. Well, I'm looking for a film that is like this new IP that sits above it, and I can't see one. Like,
this isn't new IP. It's based on the book of the same name.
Oh, but it's new cinematic IP. It's not. It is, that counts, man.
No,
it doesn't count. It's not the same thing as like.
It's
okay.
It's got massive. It's got name recognition, and it's from the. It's effectively the sequel to The Martian. It's basically a franchise.
Oh come on!
It's from the same. It says from the writer of The Martian, written by the man who wrote The Martian,
really
written by the screenplay, written by the guy who wrote the.
Do you think that makes it the same as like an Avengers film? Is that what you're saying?
Just being a cunt, mate. It's funny.
It's really wound me up. Right. Well, there you go. So, no, I think actually, relative to these other things, for what it is, I think it's done quite well. Gross worldwide to date.
I will just, aside, a movie like this, doing well, good for cinema.
Good for cinema.
Suits you, sir. Isn't it? Mm. Oh. Jumpers for goalposts. So then you asked about box office opening weekend.
No,
worldwide. No.
Gross worldwide. Gross
worldwide. Well, it's too soon for that, so.
Well, no, we have a gross worldwide figure. I've got all the dailies up to March the 29th, including today. So.
How long has it been out for?
It's been out since March the 20th. It's been out for 9 days. And it made $80 million in its first 3 days.
I just don't think there's no point playing.
I think there is.
Well, okay, but it does not count. As the game.
So, you just want to make sure that it doesn't count on the sort of canon list.
Well, it doesn't count because
scores.
It's not gross worldwide because it's still tallying up.
Well, it's technically gross worldwide at this moment as we speak. By the time people listen to this, it will have earned much more money.
Right, so it makes that pointless.
Not pointless. It's interesting to think. What the audience are interested in is whether Adam can guess or not what a film like this is made after 9 days. That's what they care about.
I mean, do they care about that?
Definitely. They email me and message me on Discord privately saying they do.
So it made 80 mil over the weekend, and that's 3 days, and then it's been open for another 5 days?
Well, technically it has been open for 10 days. So it's been open for a further 7 days. It's had its second weekend, right? So obviously the takings dip down from Monday to Thursday, and then they pick back up again.
Let's say it's still going strong. The reviews are strong. It's his best movie. 160 mil?
300 mil.
Wow.
Wow.
That's amazing. That is, you know what? That's incredible.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
There you go.
But yeah, really, really, that's incredible stuff.
Pretty exciting. Oh, yes.
It's going to make its money back and the marketing.
I mean, at this rate, it's on for a 10x potentially, isn't it?
Well, you've always got to factor in how much they've spent on the marketing.
Yeah, you will.
Sure, they only spent 200 making the darn thing, but they're going to spend half of that. Ooh, half of that.
Well, in which case they've already made the money back.
Well, who knows? They might keep this still coming out. But yeah, they'll want to make a bill with this kind of flick. That's what they want to make.
They'll want to make a bill.
Can we make a sequel, please?
Can we make the bill?
Can there be another son being infected by star-eating jizz?
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, fucking hell.
Good to know you thought this was a very good film, though. Boom, boom,
boom, boom, really boom, good movie. Boom, boom, what a good movie. I tell you what, it's the movie that people need right now. It's the movie that everyone, just this world is so bleak, and it's just about positivity and coming together and come all ye faithful. Let's do this together. Let's pull in and come. And it's like, yes, please. This is what we need now. We need positivity. We don't need any of this miserable stuff. We need come.